The Tale of One of Henry County's Most Popular Politicians, read by author Daryl Radford.
Moreland Mann comes within an eyelash of being Indiana's 41st governor. The year was 1960. Newcastle Fieldhouse was just a year old. Sid Baker had just completed his record fourth term as mayor, with Walter Falk succeeding him. Nationally, the space race was just starting to heat up. Meanwhile, in the small northeastern Henry County town of Moreland, a favorite son who had risen to the ranks of lieutenant governor was seeking the highest political office in Indiana. Crawford Parker, son of veterinarian and second of 10 children, a man who once worked as a butcher in a Moreland grocery store, was involved in a political campaign that would become one of the closest in state history, taking him, as his own son Mac Parker described, quote, within an eyelash, end quote, of becoming Indiana's 41st governor. In a recent conversation with the Courier-Times, the younger Parker shared his memories of the 1960 governor's race through a behind-the-scenes, introspective, 8-page paper he wrote about his dad's campaign. Political rise from local roots. A son of Herbert and Ethel Parker, the man who almost became governor was born in September 1906. His father was away often, working in Chicago, taking the train home on weekends. But he was a strong family provider. Almost all of Crawford Parker's brothers and sisters attended college. And college was what indirectly brought Crawford Parker to the little town of Moreland. It was at Central Normal College in Danville where he met and later married Angie Lucille Bauslog in 1926. They came to Moreland because her father, Enoch Bauslog, owned a small general store there. From there, it didn't take long for Parker to get involved in politics. He became a Republican precinct committeeman in the early 1930s and then Henry County clerk in 1942. In 1946, he was elected president of the Indiana County Clerks Association. The political rise was natural for Parker, according to his son. Quote, there was no hint of any scandal, and he was a very hard-working and dedicated public servant, end quote, Mac Parker wrote of his dad. He was very photogenic, had beautiful white hair, always a smile, and was usually dressed in a dark suit that accentuated his hair. In the midst of his second term as county clerk, statewide opportunity knocked. He was appointed Assistant Secretary of State and then to the Indiana Public Service Commission. The appointment was significant in that Parker, a Republican, was chosen for the role by Indiana Governor Henry F. Schricker, a Democrat. But Parker was accustomed to working through political differences. While his family had always been Republicans, his in-laws had always been strong Democrats. Quote, my father and grandfather Enoch never discussed politics to my knowledge, end quote, Mac Parker wrote. There would be much to talk about statewide in the years that followed, particularly after the man with the Moreland roots became lieutenant governor in 1956. Parker's record as Secretary of State was, according to his son, characterized by a modernization of corporation and securities departments and upgrading for all others. Quote, generally, he was recognized for running a very efficient office and providing outstanding service, end quote, Mac wrote. But a minefield of unfortunate political circumstances, all out of his control, awaited the man who would become within an eyelash of being governor. Slick political tricks by his political enemies hurt Crawford Parker's gubernatorial campaign. Photogenic, congenial, and personable beyond measure, Crawford Parker seemed destined for the governor's office. The Moreland man knew how to cover all the bases. He was a common sight at county fairs and had his picture taken with almost every fair queen. He went to every Republican National Convention and had met Senator Robert Taft, President Dwight D. Eisenhower, and Vice President Richard Nixon. His son Mac remembers him as a better campaigner than the man he hoped to succeed, Governor Harold Handley. He worked at remembering names and was never too busy to stop and talk to a voter, Mac Parker wrote of his father. Because he knew all the county chairmen and precinct committeemen throughout the state, he was well received almost everywhere he went. By the same token, in the State House, where he served as Assistant Secretary of State on the Public Service Commission, Secretary of State, and Lieutenant Governor, he knew almost all the secretaries and custodians and anyone else who worked there, and was never too busy to stop and talk. Many years later, when I went to the State House and the State Office Building as an attorney, people who had known him earlier still talked about how down-to-earth and what a great friend he was. The younger Parker remembers at one particular state convention how his father knew many of the 1,000-plus delegates on a first-name basis. I can remember standing in line with him as hundreds of delegates came through the reception line, and he was able to address almost each one by name, Mac Parker wrote. He knew where they lived, had visited them at their home or place of business, and knew about their family. I was amazed at his ability to recall this information. So it was no surprise when Parker was the Republican Party's nominee in the 1960 gubernatorial race. It looked like the man with the small-town roots was going to win big. But as his son eloquently wrote, a trio of circumstances beyond his control got in the way. During Handley's term as governor, two things happened which had a great effect upon the subsequent gubernatorial election, Mac Parker wrote. During George Craig's previous term as governor, some criminal conduct had taken place in conjunction with highway right-of-way buying. Later, during the Handley term, all of these gentlemen were indicted, convicted, and served time. This was used by Crawford's opponent, Matt Welsh, linking Craig, Handley, and Parker because they were all Republicans in the administration when this occurred. Linking Parker, however, was dirty politics at its worst. While my father was Secretary of State, he and George Craig were not friends and had almost no contact, Mac wrote. The second unfortunate circumstance, according to Mac Parker, was Governor Handley's decision to seek a vacant U.S. Senate seat in the middle of his gubernatorial term. But while running for the seat vacated by U.S. Senator Bill Jenner, Handley did not resign as governor. Had he done so, then Crawford, as lieutenant governor, would have become acting governor and could have run later upon his own record rather than having to run as someone who had been in the same administration as Craig and Handley, Mac wrote. These two events, the Craig highway scandals and Handley running for U.S. Senate in the middle of his term, neither of which involved Crawford directly, ended up having an important influence on the outcome of the 1960 gubernatorial race. Even though Crawford Parker campaigned vigorously for him, Handley ended up losing to Evansville Mayor Vance Hartke by 244,000 votes, just 2 years after being elected governor by a substantial margin. The newspaper clippings indicate that this was the worst defeat of a state office holder since 1936, Mac Parker wrote. Not surprisingly, Welsh used Handley's unpopularity against Crawford Parker in the 1960 gubernatorial race. Welsh didn't talk about Parker or his opponent, but he always talked about Handley Parker, Mac wrote. He used it so effectively that you thought Handley was Crawford's first name. The third circumstance impacting the 1960 gubernatorial election? Well, in a way, it involved an event in Newcastle. Perfect Circle strike in 1955 hurt Crawford Parker's chances in 1960 gubernatorial election. Excitement was in the air when Henry County voters went to the polls in November 1960. The John F. Kennedy-Richard M. Nixon televised debates had added a new aura to the presidential campaign. Meanwhile, local voters saw a rarity on their ballots when it came time to vote for governor, a Henry County man, Crawford Parker, originally from the small town of Moreland, was a serious contender for the highest political office in Indiana. Newcastle resident Jim Cole remembers the excitement that came with being a part of the Crawford Parker for Governor campaign. "It was my first real introduction to politics," said Cole, who later would run for mayor of Newcastle. Everybody loved Crawford. He was always well-dressed and well-spoken. But Parker had forces working against him that day. Even his honest reputation and work ethic could not overcome, according to his son Mac. Part of it involved what happened in Newcastle a few years earlier. Another dagger to his hopes came from the political machine that churned in the northernmost parts of Indiana. During the Hanley administration, there had been a long and bitter strike at Perfect Circle Company in Newcastle. Governor Hanley went to Newcastle, got up on a police car, and tried to, in effect, quiet what was almost a riot, Mac Parker remembered. Later, shots were fired, the National Guard was called out, and people were hurt. Unfortunately, this gave Newcastle a very bad reputation as a union town and made it very difficult for decades thereafter to get manufacturers to come to Newcastle. Also, during the Hanley campaign for senator, the right-to-work law was a big issue, and Crawford made clear his stand that he was a supporter of the right-to-work law, supported largely by business groups and Republicans, to prohibit unions from mandating that non-members pay fees to the unions for representing them. Ticket splitters ruled the day. Normally a deep red state, Parker remembers that it had been hoped that Nixon running very strong in Indiana would carry the day for his dad. But about 250,000 voters split their tickets on that fateful election day, and Crawford Parker ended up losing his gubernatorial bid, quote, by an eyelash, according to his son. The final tally, percentage-wise, was 50.39% for Welsh and 49.30% for Parker. Exit polls taken of voters at the time indicated that the highway scandals, Hanley running in the middle of his term, and the proposed repeal of right to work, as I have indicated, were factors that caused voters to split their ticket, Mac Parker wrote. Crawford finally lost by 23,000 votes. Nixon, on the other hand, carried the state by 250,000 votes, so there had been a tremendous amount of ticket splitting. To compound the loss, the Republican Lieutenant Governor Richard Ristine was elected. At that time, voters could split and did not have to vote for a governor and lieutenant governor from one party. The roller coaster of emotions and bitter pill of defeat were evident in Mac Parker's description of that night. Pat and I worked transporting people to the polls in Fort Wayne all day, and then, after the polls closed, we left to go to Indianapolis for what we had hoped was a victory celebration. At that point, Crawford was ahead and Nixon was running very strong in Indiana. The Lake County vote, which is always heavily Democratic, had already come in, and Crawford was still ahead. He continued, "However, from the time we left Fort Wayne until we got to Indianapolis, a second Lake County vote came in, and the majority from Lake County was over 60,000, much greater than any previous Lake County votes." Devastating defeat, suspicions of fraud. It was a devastating defeat at the time. The rest of the Republican state ticket was elected, except for Phil Wilkie as superintendent of public instruction. Wilkie, the son of Wendell Wilkie, the Republican presidential candidate in 1944 against FDR, was a maverick, and the Indiana State Teachers Association had campaigned very heavily against him. He lost by even more votes than Crawford did. Mac Parker said that suspicions of vote fraud hovered after the election, particularly where Lake County was concerned. A number of lawsuits were filed, but ultimately these were dismissed and the matter was turned over to the newly convened Indiana legislature. The House of Representatives was overwhelmingly Democratic and the Senate was Republican. This resulted in a deadlock and nothing was ever done. Eventually, a significant amount of vote fraud was uncovered, but the election was not disturbed. The Democrat strategy of working television and radio, hitting hard on his connection to Handley, and the highway scandals of George Craig, and rallying the Union troops with right to work repeal had been effective. End of political ambitions, but not public service. Crawford Parker never ran for office again after that election. but he also never forgot who he was and how important it was to serve. While Crawford must have been bitterly disappointed, he never talked about it and to a certain extent never showed it. He completed his term as lieutenant governor. One of the final highlights was the dedication of the new state office building of which he had been chairman. Because he was such a good friend, many people in the state house took it much harder even than he did, Mac Parker wrote. After his term was over, he took a position with the Indiana Manufacturers Association as administrative vice president and continued for the next 10 years until his retirement. He took no more interest in politics, never supported a candidate, or got involved in any way. Unlike the election, Parker's achievements were not something any Democrat strategy could touch. As head of the Department of Commerce, Parker was instrumental in getting Indiana 3 between Newcastle and Muncie dual-laned. And while the road to the governor's office was blocked for him personally, Parker would go on to make an appreciable difference for safer roads all across Indiana. Mack added, later on he received considerable publicity for an idea he had turned over to the State Highway Department, that is, painting a white stripe down each side of the highway. This had not been done previously in Indiana or elsewhere, and he came up with the idea while driving the state campaigning.